Now, I think Vegas knows the sport probably better than anybody. Just look at their record and the sheer size and quantity of the buildings that line the strip. But I look at the win total on this team in particular, and I just don't see it. I feel like they are way undervaluing what they could be in 24. Hello and welcome in. It's a May 2nd edition of Always College Football. I'm Greg McElroy alongside Jack Foster, Mark Kubiak, and Jake Garcia. Thank you guys for being here. We have a really fun show, and we have avoided all spring the win total projections because we don't really know what these teams are going to be, at least until we've had a somewhat of a look. Like, you could tell me all day long that Dylan Raiola is going to be an incredible quarterback for Nebraska, but do we really know that until we see how he looks in the Nebraska uniform in a spring game setting? Probably not. So we resist the urge to dive in early so that we can hit it with a little bit more accuracy at this time of the year. We start to go into schedules maybe a little bit, start to evaluate what teams bring back, their returning production, maybe guys that could advance, who's factoring into the starting role, improvements at quarterback, the transfer portal. We factor in all those things. And then we start to evaluate what they might be post-spring. Now, we're not yet at a point where I tell you hammer the over on this Vegas win total. What we're going to do today is we're going to take two teams with the same win total in the four Power Five leagues and assess which one we feel better about. Now, we reserve the right to change as things move forward to the season. We reserve the right to adjust our beliefs. Maybe there's a little more buzz coming out later in the summer about progress being made by a young player or a new enrollee. But as of right now, we're going to look at the post-spring win total and tell you which team we feel better about today in early May heading into 2024. As always, like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your show. We've had a bunch of people come in and leave one-star ratings. I know people are upset with our stance on the playoff last year, but that was last year. We are moving forward, so you can help bolster us with five-star ratings across the board. That'd be awesome. You know who you are that have left one-star ratings, and if you think this show stinks that bad, you're probably not leaving a rating to begin with. So we know you listen. We know, and we appreciate all of you for doing so. Whether it's on the ESPN YouTube channel or here with us via the podcast, we look forward to it. Let's dive in. Some win totals, some comparable teams, and who might have the edge post-spring. So what we'll do today is we'll pick two teams from a conference that have the same Vegas win total and tell you which one after spring we feel better about, okay? Now, found this kind of interesting, and you might also find it very interesting because some of the win totals are a little eye-opening, if I'm going to be completely honest, particularly in the Big 12. So we'll go through it, and we'll do our best to kind of assess what teams might do what. So we'll start in the SEC. Koobs, who are we doing?
All right, we're going to start with Oklahoma or Auburn. Who do you feel better about after spring?
Now, both teams come into the season with a win total expectancy of 7.5 wins. That's where Vegas has it. Auburn, that's a pretty decent improvement in year number two for Hugh Freeze. And for Oklahoma, that's a pretty significant regression as they enter into the SEC. We'll start with the newcomers in Oklahoma, looking at what they bring back offensively and defensively. According to S&P Plus, that's Bill Connolly's metric on ESPN, does a great job of measuring returning production. Oklahoma returned 62% of their production off of last year's team. 79% total production off defense. That's actually eighth in college football. And then offensively, they're 111th, down at 44%. Of course, when you lose Dylan Gabriel and you lose some of the pieces that they lost, it is what it is. But let's look at what they do have, right? I think Deion Burks has a chance to be a complete game changer. We saw that in the spring game. And I think the wideout position was a spot that I was really intrigued by with Oklahoma. Also very intrigued by the progression and growth that Jackson Arnold has had. He looks like he's in control. I feel like turnovers are not going to be an issue. And I think he's going to do a great job with these new offensive coordinators who I have a ton of respect for in Seth Luttrell and JoJohn Finley. Also, a couple impact offensive linemen that going to be watching closely. They did load up at the position. I think they feel pretty good about what they have right now, what they brought back in. And then you look at what they have contributor-wise defensively, who all is going to be coming back. I feel pretty good about them there as well. Let's go to the schedule. Temple, Houston, and Tulane. Those will be the three games out of the gate, all at home. All should be victories for Oklahoma when taking into account what they bring back. So they should start 3-0. You got Tennessee at home. Very difficult game. I think both teams will be ranked in the top 20. I think Tennessee at that point might have a chance to be ranked in the top 10. A lot of buzz around Tennessee's program, and understandably so. I like them a lot this year as well. A road trip to Auburn, ironically enough, will be a very difficult game. So let's look at it and say, you know what, right now maybe Oklahoma's 3-2, thereabouts. Texas is the following week on October 12th. That's a neutral site, obviously, there in Dallas. And then they get South Carolina home, a game that they absolutely have to win if they want to get to the 8-win plateau. And that's ultimately where we're trying to get them here in this exercise. At Ole Miss, that'll be a tough game. Maine at home, that's a win. At Missouri, tough game. Against Alabama at home, very tough game, and then at LSU. So when you look at the schedule, I think Oklahoma has a very, very difficult schedule. And while I like them an awful lot this year, it's tough for me to have a ton of confidence in telling you right now that without question, they're going over the 7.5 win plateau. You look at LSU, I think it's a losable game. Bama, losable game. At Missouri, losable game. At Ole Miss, losable game. Texas in a neutral site, that's a losable game. Then you have two teams at Auburn. Welcome to the SEC, very difficult spot. And then Tennessee at home. I don't think they lose them all by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think getting to 8 wins will be a little bit difficult for Brent Venables. Let's go to Auburn now. Pretty good job on the portal for Hugh Freeze. They obviously hit that hard and needed to upgrade their personnel at a bunch of different positions. As far as returning production, 65% is back, 74% offensively, that was 27th. 55% defensively, that was 78th. But you look at the additions in the portal, and this is why I'm cautiously optimistic about what Auburn might do this season. I think Keandre Lambert-Smith is rock solid. Will he ultimately be the number one wide receiver? I don't know if I can go that far, but I do think incoming freshman Cam Coleman could be. That guy could be an immediate difference maker. They really needed to bolster their personnel at wide receiver. If you look at Peyton Thorne, people will blame him, say he's not up par with some of the top quarterbacks in the SEC. And while I'll agree from a talent standpoint, yeah, he's not as talented as some of the guys he'll be competing against. If you surround him with a really good supporting cast, I think he can be highly productive. Just look back a couple years ago at what he did when he had a solid nucleus of talent around him at Michigan State. I thought Sam Jackson was a great add at wide receiver from Cal, and they really need to bolster their bodies along the defensive line. So you go and get Isaiah Rakes recently from USC, a defensive tackle. Phillip Bleedy from Indiana, he's going to be a potential difference maker there in the front. Trill Carter should be a big body enforcer, run stopper there from Texas, and then Gage Keys, a defensive lineman from Kansas, really solid additions. Let's go through the schedule. Alabama, A&M, Cal, New Mexico, Arkansas. All four games are in Jordan-Hare. All four games, I would expect Auburn to win. So we're out of the gate, 4-0, looking like they're in a pretty good spot. Oklahoma at home. Said this was a toss-up game already for Oklahoma. I'll keep it as a toss-up game for Auburn. I think Oklahoma's going to be good, like we talked about. Their win-loss record might not reflect that, but a trip to the Plains is always a very difficult place to play. So we'll find out in that game. We'll put that one in the maybe column, at least as the moment. At Georgia, at Missouri, at Kentucky. Three incredibly difficult games back to back to back for the Auburn Tigers. They do get the break after Georgia before they have to go to Missouri, but then they follow that Missouri game with a game at Kentucky, and I think Kentucky's going to be improved this season here for Mark Stoops on both sides of the ball. They get Vandy at home, UL Monroe, Texas A&M, and then they go to Alabama for the Iron Bowl on November 30th. So let's go through the potential games that are very losable, if you will. At Alabama, A&M at home, at Kentucky, at Missouri, at Georgia, Oklahoma. All right. I think when you look at this, we just said for Oklahoma, there's 7 losable games. For Auburn, I think there's 6 losable games. So I actually lean Auburn here in 2024 as far as the win-loss record is concerned. I think their schedule is more manageable and more gettable. Even though it's very difficult, I do think Auburn has a slight advantage over Oklahoma here heading into the season.
All right, moving on to the Big Ten. And I just laugh at this when I looked at it, because imagine 15 years ago saying this. Who do you like more in spring, USC or Nebraska in the Big Ten?
The fact that both teams have a win total in Vegas of 7.5 is really surprising, is it not? Especially knowing what Nebraska was last year and what SC looked like 2 years ago in Lincoln Riley's first year when they were a win away from potentially getting to the college football playoffs. So two programs that have been in very different places in the last few years, but it does feel like Nebraska's on the upswing. And some people are seemingly feeling like USC's on the decline. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but I do think the transition for SC into the Big Ten will be a challenging one. Let's start with Nebraska. Bring back a lot of talent, a lot of personnel, a lot of production off of last year's team. 77% production returning, 76% offensively, and 78% defensively. But the glaring weakness for Nebraska last year was obviously at quarterback. I don't need to explain that to anybody. Henrik Harburg was 108th last year in QBR, and he was their highest rated signal caller of the bunch. It's not going to cut it. His QBR was 40, by the way. Average should be 50 plus. He was 40. They were 120th in total offense, and they were minus 17 in the turnover margin. There is not a team in college football that had more turnovers than Nebraska last year. 31 total turnovers. Now, will it be Dylan Raiola? We'll find out. But I look at the spring game, and albeit, look, it's 31 plays, and it's scripted for success offensively. But if you listen to the buzz coming out of spring, they feel like they've really progressed on that side of the ball. The additions at wide receiver in the portal, but Jamal Banks from Wake Forest and Isaiah Nair from Texas should improve this offense drastically. And I already like what they have defensively. So I think they're going to be in a pretty good spot. Remember, we said they returned 78% of their production, good for ninth in the country as far as returning quality on that side of the ball. So if they can just get 20% improved quarterback play, 25% improved quarterback play, which should not be a significant ask, then I think this team has a chance to really flip the script from a disappointing season that was and become a team that absolutely punches their ticket to the postseason. Let's go through the schedule. UTEP, week one, should be a win. Colorado at home, week two, that should be a win. Northern Iowa at home, that should be a win. And then Illinois at home, I think that should be a win as well. They're at Purdue. I do not have high hopes for Purdue this year. And they get Rutgers at home. We could very well be going into October 19th with a Nebraska team that is at worst 6-1. It's a very real possibility. Excuse me, October 26th, because they follow that game against Rutgers and the bye week with a road trip to Indiana. New staff, new regime. I don't think Indiana is going to be a player, at least at this point. So you're looking at it right now, and we're at the end of October, and Nebraska's 6-1. Maybe, just maybe, they're 7-0. Does get a little trickier down the stretch. At Ohio State, UCLA at home, at USC, Wisconsin at home, and then at Iowa. Let's talk about the losable games. At Iowa, that's understandable. Wisconsin at home, I think that's a losable game. At USC, I think that's a losable game on the road. UCLA at home, I can't add it right now. I cannot add UCLA, because looking at what UCLA lost and what UCLA brings back, I think UCLA is a game that should be won by Nebraska, at least at this point. Ohio State on the road, obviously a very losable game. So I'm counting right now four. Now, if you want to put a couple more into the mix, at Purdue, perhaps, Illinois at home, maybe it's Colorado. They didn't do a good job keeping up athletically last year with Colorado, but I do think this team will be better prepared for what Colorado might throw at them. I look right now, and I think Nebraska's got a real good chance of looking at 8-4. I really believe that. I think the first seven games of their schedule is extremely manageable before they finish tough. But at that point, I think Dylan Raiola, who ultimately will be the starting quarterback, will be well ready to take on the increased competition. So maybe 8-4, 7-5 in that vicinity for the Cornhuskers. Let's go to USC. They returned just 50% of their production, 51% offensively, 49% defensively. That's 96th and 102nd, respectively, there for the Trojans. Who's it going to be at quarterback? Will it be Miller Moss? Will it be Jordan Mayava? We'll find out. I think Jordan Mayava's athleticism gives him another dimension, so I think he'll have a role in the offense either way. Man, the one time I saw Miller Moss take meaningful snaps, he looked pretty dang good. New defensive coordinator in Danton Lynn, a top 14 portal class, top four portal class in the Big Ten with 15 new guys, and I love the late additions of Jay Fair at wide receiver and Greedy Vance in the defensive backfield. Don't sleep on Woody Marks either. I think really solid running back addition too that can do a lot of things, both catching the ball out of the backfield and running the ball between the tackles for Lincoln Riley and the Trojans. Let's go through the schedule. It is a bruiser. SC schedule, I think, is extremely difficult. You get LSU in the non-conference there in week number one. Is that a game that can be won? Absolutely, but it is also a game that can absolutely be lost. Utah State week two at Michigan week three. Wisconsin at home week four. At Minnesota week five. Penn State at home, at Maryland, Rutgers at home, at Washington, Nebraska at home, at UCLA, before finishing up with the Irish of Notre Dame at home there on November 30th. Let's go through the games that could be losable. Notre Dame, very losable game. At UCLA, they have not fared well in that game these last couple of years, but I don't think UCLA, like I talked about a moment ago, I'm not sure UCLA is going to be of the same quality this year than they were of recent years, so I'm going to remove them from the list. Nebraska game at home, is it losable? Yes. Should it be for USC? Probably not, because that game is at home, but I'll put it on the list right now for the discussion. At Washington, I think Washington's going to have a heavy reload this year, so I think Washington takes a step back, but it's on the road. Can they handle it? I would think they probably can, but either way, we'll put it on the list just for safe measures. Rutgers, at home, you should handle that game. At Maryland, that'll be a tricky one, especially on the heels of having played Penn State the week before. Be careful on October 19th when you travel to College Park to take on the Terps. Put it on the list, at least for this point. Penn State, at home, very losable game. At Minnesota, a game they should absolutely win. Wisconsin, another one that you feel pretty good about Wisconsin's significant improvement, but is it a losable game? Probably not at home, not for SC, not at this point. They don't know how to defend that offense because they play against it almost all the time. At Michigan, very losable game. And then LSU in the non-con, that's a losable game as well. That's 5 plus 2, 7 very difficult games on the schedule for USC. And as backwards as it sounds, and I think USC is going to have really good talent. I think they'll be better defensively. I think SC right now, if I had to pick between them and Nebraska as far as their final win total is concerned, I would lean towards Nebraska with what I've seen from them post-spring.
Can you imagine if Nebraska somehow wins a couple of those losable games late in the schedule and gets to 10 wins? I mean, talk about the Blue Bloods, like excitement.
You start thinking about Nebraska, though, and you start going through the schedule and what their obvious liabilities were last year at quarterback. And just a little bit of improvement at quarterback and a little more ball security, and we're talking about a completely different team. Now, I don't like close losses. Like, close doesn't count to me. And we know Nebraska has laid an egg multiple times when they shouldn't have. I get that. But if you really look at what they bring back, you really look at some of the additions they've made, the improvement that they're likely going to have at quarterback, the improvement they're going to have offensively across the board, they should be extremely competitive and probably win, frankly, at least 6 of their first 7 games. And you get hot. You start to get momentum. You start to get belief. Anything's possible down the stretch. Now, are they going to beat Ohio State? No. But I do think Nebraska is one of those teams that not enough people are talking about, and it would not surprise me at all if they got to 8 or 9 wins this year by pulling a couple upsets off in November and late October.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. better because it has to be.
On to Nebraska's old conference, the Big 12. Who do you believe in more post-spring, Oklahoma State or TCU?
Both teams, shockingly coming in at 7.5 on the win totals, according to Vegas. Now, I am trying to wrap my head around that with Oklahoma State. I really am. It's a team that last year had a really nice season and everybody's back. I mean, I'm trying to figure out, like, what does Vegas know about Oklahoma State that I don't know? Now, did they catch fire late? Sure. And yeah, if you look at September last year, I can understand why you would be bearish on what they might do this year. But 77% returning production, 79% offensively, that was 15th, 74% defensively, that's 14th. You get Alan Bowman back. You bring back the Doak Walker Award winner of Ollie Gordon. You know he's going to be outstanding this year and might take a little pressure off of him as well because you have now at least a 1-2 punch with AJ Green joining the fold from Arkansas. Rashad Owens, Dejon Stribling, and Brennan Presley return as the three wide receivers. Brennan Presley in the slot. Stribling, I know, is a great player, and Owens got the top end speed to take it off the defense. You get the second year in Brian Nardo's defense, and there was a bit of a transition period for them last year. Remember, it was a completely different structure than what they've played in the past, going to a three-down defensive line. Two of their top three linebackers are back, including Nick Martin, who is crazy athletic, super tackling machine. He's going to have a better feel for the defense. If they can shore up the back end, they should be in pretty good shape. How the heck is Oklahoma State's win total at 7.5? Well, let's go through the schedule. South Dakota State, not an easy one, but one that they absolutely should win. Arkansas at home, a game that they should win. Frankly, I mean, they have a lot more knowns than Arkansas at the moment. We know the game at Tulsa will be tough. It's always tough, but we should be looking at an Oklahoma State team that is 3-0 to start the season. We should. Now, will we? We'll find out. Utah at home, very tough game. At Kansas State, very tough game. West Virginia at home, very tough game. But I think they're a little bit ahead of West Virginia, at least at the moment, because I think West Virginia's got to replace some really key pieces at some key positions. But I do like the Mountaineers this year. At BYU, that's a game they should be in. They should probably be favored in that game, even though it's on the road. At Baylor, Arizona State at home. Arizona State still a long way to go. At TCU, Texas Tech at home, and then at Colorado. So let's go through the losables for Oklahoma State. Is at Colorado a losable game? I have a hard time at this point believing that Colorado will be outfitted enough to be able to stop the downhill rushing attack of Ollie Gordon and this Oklahoma State offense. I'm going to give them that one. Texas Tech at home, I'm going to give them that one. At TCU, let's put that one in the losable category. I think TCU, I'll talk about them in a minute. I think they're going to be pretty good this season. Arizona State at home. I look at Arizona State. I think Arizona State still has work to do in year number two under Kenny Dillingham. At Baylor, I think it's a turkey game. I'm going to put them on the list. I think Baylor does have a bounce back season this year. I just don't know to what extent what that bounce back is going to look like. BYU on the road. I think they get that one. I referenced it. I think they'll be favored in that game. BYU's got a few pieces to replace and a few things to iron out. So I do think Oklahoma State at this point, with the known commodities coming out of spring, is ahead of where the Cougars are, even though that game will be played in Provo. West Virginia at home. I think it's a game they should win. At Kansas State. They got Kansas State last year. Now it's on the road in Manhattan. Let's put that one on the list. So I count them up right now. I count them up. And then you got Utah. Utah, I think it's a toss-up game. So four. I look at four right now for Oklahoma State that are very, very losable. Now, could they lose one they're not supposed to? Of course. Oklahoma State's done that a bunch. And Oklahoma State really operates well in an underdog situation. But I don't know, man. They bring a lot of guys back that experienced a lot of success last year and will be further ahead in understanding the system that they reverted to offensively there after week four and defensively that they reverted to last spring. So I'm very, very optimistic about Oklahoma State, at least at this point, going over their win total of 7.5. Let's go to TCU. A lot of production back on defense for them, 78%. That's 10th in the country, just 63% back offensively. But you look last year at what TCU was. They were 82nd. We just talked about Nebraska a moment ago. Nebraska was one of the worst teams in the country offensively. They were 120th. Well, we know TCU. We know what their problems were. It was on the defensive side of the football. They were 82nd in total defense. So they go in, they bring in a new defensive coordinator. Andy Avalos is in, former head coach at Boise State, and big changes were made. They were running that 3-3-5 defense under Joe Gillespie, but now they've shifted to kind of a versatile scheme that can rush a lot of guys and probably be a little bit more aggressive and will probably be a little confusing to opposing offenses. And if any indicator is to be had, look at Frogapalooza. If you're not familiar with Frogapalooza is, I wouldn't expect you to know unless you're a TCU fan. The team's offense and the team's defense in their spring game, it's called Frogapalooza, they went together 17 drives. 17 drives, TCU's offense played against TCU's defense. 17 drives and only 4 touchdowns were recorded by the offense. And their starting field position, it's not like they were starting deep in their own end. Of those 17 drives, 11 of those drives came beyond the 30-yard line. So TCU brought in a top 20 transfer class, the second-best transfer class in the Big 12 behind Colorado, who brought in 13 more players than the Horned Frogs. So it's understandable they're going to be behind Colorado, but it's just because of quantity. Is it because of quality? That I don't know at the moment. Let's go through the schedule. At Stanford, a game that they should absolutely win. Long Island University, a game they should definitely win. UCF at home, toss-up game, but I lean TCU. In that setting, at SMU, I really like SMU this year, and Vegas surprisingly actually has them in the new AACC. That's actually a 7.5 win team, according to Vegas. So keep an eye on SMU. That's a tricky game. It's a rivalry game. So that one you need to be very careful with. At Kansas, very tough game. Houston at home, a game that they should win. At Utah, probably a game they're going to lose. Texas Tech at home, a game that they should probably win. At Baylor, bit of a tricky game. Oklahoma State at home, Arizona at home, and then at Cincinnati. Let's go through the losables starting from the back forward. Cincinnati's the final game of the season. They should win that game. Even though it's on the road, it'll be cold. We know that. But it's a game that should be won by the Horned Frogs. Arizona at home, losable game. They bring a lot back as well. Oklahoma State at home, losable game. Bring a lot back as well. At Baylor, just reference them when talking about what Oklahoma State is. That could be a tricky one. We'll put them in the losable category, but I still probably lean TCU at this point. Texas Tech, offensively, I think Texas Tech's going to be able to run the football. I think they're going to be really solid. But at this point, I lean TCU, knowing that that game's going to be played in Fort Worth. At Utah, I'll also put that in the losing category. And then at Kansas, I'm going to put that in the losing category as well. So I have 5 right now before I get to SMU. We'll put that one down just because it's a rivalry game. It's a tricky one, and it's on the road. I like UCF this year, but I still like TCU a little bit more, especially there in Fort Worth. So I have 6 right now for TCU. So right now, post-spring, I'm going to go with the Oklahoma State Cowboys edging the national championship runners-up from 2 years ago. Even though I think they'll have a bounce back year, I just think we are way undervaluing what Oklahoma State is, at least in Vegas, based on what they bring back and the established identity and culture that Mike Gundy has established both offensively and defensively.
Maybe Vegas struggles with the Big 12. I mean, I looked it up. In 2022, they had TCU at 6.5 wins. They won 13. And last year, they had Oklahoma State at 6.5, and they won 10. So I like your picks there. All right, on to the ACC. Who do you feel better about after spring? Miami or Clemson?
Now, we almost need to preface this by saying, could these two teams be any more different? Right? Like, you got portal versus homegrown developed talent. Like, it's, they could not have a more different approach. And yet, here Vegas is with Miami and Clemson both at the 9.5 win plateau. It's pretty significant. I really like both teams this year. I think both teams have a chance to get to the college football playoff. And I know you're saying, well, obviously with Clemson, they've been good forever. Miami, people probably not quite as bullish on them just yet, but look out, my friends. I think Miami is a player this year when it comes to the 12-team format. Let's go and look at what Miami brings back. 79% of their production returns offensively. That's 18th. 84th on defense with just 53% returning. Overall, 66%. So in a pretty good spot, but they do have some work to do on the defensive side as far as filling a couple voids. Still feel good about what they have on that side of the ball. Now, they've done a great job in the portal. Now, I know they might not rank number one, but I look at legitimate difference makers and guys that they added and how they're going to impact the roster. And I'm not sure there's a team that's done a better job in the portal than Miami this offseason. Cam Ward, immediate difference maker, all ACC contender, potential outside shot at becoming an All-American in this style of offense. Damian Martinez at running back. The guy is an absolute hammer from Oregon State. Big 230-pound back that will get downhill and will take care of the football. I love the addition of Sam Brown, transfer at wide receiver from Houston, to complement the guys that they already have on the roster at wide receiver. And then defensively, Jalen Alderman, I love him from Louisville. Really athletic guy. I think he's going to be a good fit in this defense, a blitz-heavy scheme that Lance Guidry likes to run, and I think he's going to be a really nice fit and probably a fun position to play, that will linebacker spot, more than likely what he's going to occupy. And then Mish Powell from Washington, the guy just makes plays. I mean, just makes plays all the time. Timely interceptions, timely plays, and good instincts there by Mish Powell. So I look at Miami, I think they have drastically improved. Much like Nebraska, I think they've drastically improved at quarterback. They had a lot of issues as it related to turnovers last year, and Miami was their own worst enemy. How many different times did we go into a game last year and look at the personnel and say, man, Miami's got an advantage as far as personnel is concerned, only see them play down to the level of their competition, make a pivotal mistake or two, which ultimately led to them losing a game they shouldn't have lost? Probably four times, maybe three. But go watch Miami at their best. That was in week two against Texas A&M. If you get that every week, look out. Miami, I think Miami is going to be a real problem for a lot of teams this year. At Florida, I think that's a game they should win. Now, will they? It's on the road. It's a rivalry. I get that. That's a game that Miami should win, at least at the moment. Florida A&M, that's a win. Ball State, that's a win. At South Florida, I think South Florida's going to be good, by the way. I think they're going to be really good. One of the better G5 programs in the country. That's a game, though, that should be won by the Miami Hurricanes. You're looking at a potential 4-0 start. Virginia Tech comes to you. I like your chances there. At Cal, love your chances there. At Louisville, Louisville's turned over so much, and I loved them last year, but I just wonder if they'll be able to replicate the magic that they had at times last year. So I lean Miami in that particular spot. Florida State at home, toss-up game. Very difficult game, and one that might very well decide who's the number one overall team in the regular season there in the ACC. Duke at home, I think Duke's in a bit of a rebuild, but I still think they're going to be solid, but not at home. Miami should handle that one. At Georgia Tech, the revenge factor will be significant in this game. Georgia Tech, remember, because Miami didn't kneel on it. They won that game in dramatic fashion last year. I have a feeling that one's circled not just for Mario Cristobal, but for the entire Miami team. Wake Forest at home, and they're at Syracuse. They should not lose in those final two games of the year. So let's go through the losable games. At Syracuse, is it losable? Perhaps. Should it be? No. Wake Forest? No. At Georgia Tech? No. Shouldn't be. But I think Georgia Tech's got a chance to be very dangerous this year. So on November 9th, Miami needs to be careful. Duke at home? No. Florida State? Yes. At Louisville? It's tough for me, at least at this point, to feel like that Louisville is going to be able to rebuild the same way they had last year. At Cal, that's a game they should win. Virginia Tech at home, difficult game. And if it were in Blacksburg, I'd lean Virginia Tech, but it's in Miami. I will lean Miami in that game and the game at Florida, which will be very tricky as well. I look at it, I think Miami should be, at worst, 10-2. I really believe that. So you lose to Florida State, that would be understandable. Maybe you lose to Virginia Tech at home in a tough game. Maybe you lose in the opener against Florida. Maybe you lose at Louisville. I don't see it, though. Based on their personnel, the upgrade they made at quarterback, the way they've continued to bolster their roster with depth in the portal, I think Miami's in prime position to be looking at a 10-2 situation. So we'll put two losable games on the schedule because they'll probably lose one they shouldn't at some point or another. Let's get to Clemson. 64% production returning, 79% offensively, that's 20th. 49% returning defensively, that was 103rd. Now, you look at the defense, and you would think 103rd and think, man, that's a lot of pieces that need to be replaced. But then you look back at the biggest difference makers for them at times last year, and they were all true freshmen. I would expect a significant bump from TJ Parker. I expect a significant bump from Khalil Barnes. I expect a significant bump from Peter Woods. I think those things are realistic and to be expected. Now, can you replace Nate Wiggins? Probably not. Will you be able to adequately replace Jeremiah Trotter? Probably not. But I love what Phil Moff is going to be. I think this could be a grinded out outfit offensively. I think he showed last year he is a premier back in the ACC, runs with great power and patience. I hope that Cade Klubnik here in year number two, working with Garrett Riley, the offensive coordinator, he's going to be even more comfortable and more ahead of where he was at this point last year. You bring back eight starters on defense. And I know, like I said, the production might not necessarily be there, but a lot of guys that have played a lot of football are back. Okay. Losing Trotter and Wiggins, very tough, but at least you got Barrett Carter there at the weak side linebacker spot. You got a bunch of really good players that are recruits at a high level that are going to be stepping in. And we saw just how much freshmen can make an impact last year, whether it's DeMonte Capehart in the back end, along the front, RJ Mickens at the back end. I think they're going to be in a really, really good spot there going into the season, especially on the defense side of the football. Just got to be a little more consistent offensively, and Clemson could be cooking with gas this year. Georgia in the opener, really tough game. Appalachian State, NC State, Stanford. Those next three are all at home. They should be won by the Clemson Tigers. At Florida State, very difficult game. We know just how good Florida State's going to be. I think that's a very tricky game for Clemson, but it's one that they'll definitely have circled. At least they get a little bit of a lead up, because Stanford at home, that should not be a highly competitive game. They will have been challenged against NC State. They will have been challenged against Georgia. So it won't wake them up when they have to play against Florida State on October 5th. At Wake Forest, Virginia at home, Louisville at home, at Virginia Tech, at Pitt, the Citadel, and South Carolina. South Carolina is a game they should win. Not concerned about it if I'm the Clemson Tigers. Citadel, also a game that will be won naturally. At Pitt, I don't have enough faith in Pitt at this point to feel good about them giving Clemson a game for 60 minutes. At Virginia Tech, very difficult game. We'll put that one on the list right now. Louisville at home. They don't lose at home, so I'm not putting that game on the list. Virginia at home. They don't lose at home. At Wake Forest, a game that should be won by Clemson. They've handled Dave Clawson's offense pretty dang well at times outside of 2 years ago when Sam Hartman lit them up. They have matched up really well against that style of attack for many years. I think they'll win that game on the road. At Florida State, we'll put that one on the list, and we'll put the Georgia Bulldogs on the list. So, looking at Clemson, I think worst case scenario is a 9-win team, but I said a moment ago, I think Miami, worst case scenario, 10 wins. So, coming out of spring with the additions that Miami's made, I lean Miami in the preseason here heading into 24.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, the portal window has come and gone here in the spring. Remember, it opens on April 16th. It closes on April 30th. And we heard a lot of buzz leading up to this second portal window about how this was going to be the biggest portal week of all time. This is going to be the biggest portal day of all time. And I just want everyone to just be mindful. Just be mindful. And this is not being critical. This is not being negative. You know me. We always view college football in a positive light. We try our very best to view it through a positive lens, through a glass half full perspective. But we also need to acknowledge that the people covering college football are also, I think, in some ways trying to do the exact same thing. But at the end of the day, there are a lot of people that are really profiting off the portal. A lot of people that are profiting off the portal. I'm not talking about the players. I'm talking about the sites that cover the portal. And I, for one, work for several of them. You know, I mean, like, I do a lot of work and all this stuff with people that are going to benefit greatly from subscriptions being purchased because they cover the portal really, really well. So I'm just want to make sure that everybody understands, at least the way I've been explained to coaches, to me from coaches. Coaches have told me this about the spring portal window. Spring portal window is about reinforcements. It's about reinforcements more so than it is about finding plug-and-play starters. Now, in the rare event in which a plug-and-play starter enters the portal, 100%, everybody will go all after that guy. Damian Martinez, as an example, great running back from Oregon State, decided to test the portal waters, ends up at Miami, will likely be a plug-and-play starter for the Canes. There's a handful of examples of guys that entered the portal here after the spring that are probably going to start. We talked a little earlier about Auburn. Keandre Lambert-Smith, probably a plug-and-play starter for the Auburn Tigers. But is he all of a sudden going to become overnight, you know, the next Julio Jones? I don't think so. Not necessarily. Because by the time you get out of spring, you kind of know what you have. You know the depth. You know the pecking order. You don't know with certainty, but you have a better idea about, yep, you know what? I'm going to be a factor in this offense. I'm going to be a factor for this team. I'm going to have a significant role on this team. So while it'd be nice to test the portal waters, it'd be nice to maybe leverage up my NIL deal. A lot of the NIL money is already accounted for because of the signing period and because of the December portal window. So I think we need to move forward understanding that the spring portal and landing a big fish in the spring portal is probably not going to be as likely as some outlets want you to believe. Like I said, there are examples every year. There's going to be a guy this year at the end of the portal that's going to completely impact his team in a positive way. Maybe that guy is Damian Martinez. Maybe it is. But for the most part, the spring is about finding depth, finding and creating additional competition at positions that might have youth in that spot right now. So you go and find a veteran guy that can at least challenge the freshman that has locked down that spot after the spring. And then in the rare event in which a defensive player or a defensive tackle or an edge rusher goes in, everybody's on him. So hopefully you got a big check that you can write to go and get that guy. But no, I think moving forward, the portal has been kind of underwhelming here in the spring. Not in a bad way, but based on what people were telling us about who was going to go in and how big it was going to be, it didn't really deliver on some of the expectations. That's because I think most guys are very comfortable where they're at after the spring, their role after the spring, and they're just not necessarily looking for the greener pastures that some people think they're looking for. So I think we proceed with caution in the spring. And if you got a huge hole on your roster after spring football, you might be able to fill it, but it might be a bullet hole that you're covering with a Band-Aid. The likelihood of landing a guy that's an All-American contender is incredibly small. That'll do it for us here at Always College Football. Continue to like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your show. We also very much appreciate everybody for chiming in on our social media at Greg McElroy, at AlwaysCFB, on both Instagram and on Twitter. We'll continue to interact with you there, post some clips, post some highlights, and have some fun interaction with some polls, some questions, and some things that we want to get to. So submit questions on there because we're going to start opening up the mailbag because the buzz is starting to build towards Media Days, which will be here in 6, 7, 8 weeks. And then, of course, after Media Days, we're off and running in the 2024 season. So for all of us here at Always College Football, for Mark, Jake, Jack, the other Jack, I'm Greg. We hope you have a tremendous day. And remember, it's Always College Football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.